Welcome to our last call for the sort of season or program cycle. This is RF-103, and I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting it from the traditional territory of Kwinana Dun First Nation and Tahkwa'tan Council. I see some of you guys are in the chat, so that's great. I'll pop questions in there. Last week, I really enjoyed our conversation last week about Arctic Winter Games and NAIG, or North American Indigenous Games. I'm going to jump in and make sure people's questions are being answered. I like how you guys have had some statements and some questions. That was the RLA that was due on Sunday. If you haven't had a chance to do it, jump in there, read what other people have posted, and try and answer somebody else's question. This week, we get to wrap up with a bit of fun. We get to explore some of the festivals, music, dancing, games, and on-the-land activities that we think of as recreation, arts, and culture. Today's call, we're just going to talk about how they're fun and how they're unique. As you can see, we have unique weather systems all the way across the north from one end to the other. Just the same, our cultures are unique. We've got a lot of diversity. Often the festivals and music and dancing that you see reflects that diversity that we have across the north. If you think way back to when we started some of our learning events and through them, we talked about the framework for recreation in Canada. You might remember that the framework for recreation in Canada describes recreation as an experience that results from people freely choosing to participate in whether it's physical, social, intellectual, creative, or spiritual pursuits that enhance the well-being of people and our communities. If you think of that definition, I'm curious to know, and there's so many differences of opinion on this, but I'm curious to know if you think that music, dancing, festivals, on-the-land activities, and traditional games are recreation or not. There's no right or wrong answer, and I'm going to start, Deanne. I'm not sure if you're able to jump in, but we'll start with you because you're at the top of my list, and then we'll go Peter, Kumanovic, Nathan, and Scott, and then I'll change. I'll flip it around as we go. I'm just going to post that question in the chat. Just a quick yes, no, or I don't know is totally fine. From your perspective, do you consider music, dancing, festivals on the land, and traditional games to be recreation? Why or why not? Deanne, any thoughts on that?
I would say yes. So all this event, the music, dance, and they are part of the competition, and yeah, it's supposed to be yes for yeah. They do help a lot in developing the social and mental, and definitely the like. If you take the dancing nowadays, dancing is a big event. It's in the competition, and it involves lots of physicality also. So yes.
That's great. Thanks, Deanne. And Peter, how about you? Do you see those events and activities as recreation, or would you call them something else?
I mean, I guess you could maybe call it something else, but I definitely think it's recreation, just anything that is getting you out and about and socializing and being active. Other than work, I consider recreation. So all those kind of fall
Work is
into
not recreation. Okay. Thanks, Peter. And Kumanovic, how about you? Like in your community, do you see music and dancing and festivals and on the land as recreation or not? And I noticed your phone's muted, so you might need to unmute it. There we go.
Oh, yes. It is. Everything is pretty much recreation for us up here. Planning, scheduling, everything else that is required to open up an event. So typically recreation that does all that stuff up here.
That's great. Thanks. And Nathan, how about in your community? Do you guys consider music, dancing, festivals, all those things to be recreation?
Yeah, Nathan here, recreation coordinator for Baker Lake. And yeah, 100%. not only are music, dancing, festivals, on the land activities, traditional games, recreation, they're my core programming. That's all I do 100% of the day, week, month, year. I have Festival by the Lake, square dances, team dances, recreational hunting. We have to open up the roads. We have three road to nowheres, one going north, going east, going west, so that vehicles can just go out hunting very easily. And I just sent kids, seven youth and one youth leader, to Toronto to go dancing with outside looking in. They spent 2 weeks in Toronto at Camp Choku, learning to dance, learning to canoe, swimming, archery, all the traditional First Nation games that the First Nation Aboriginals do down south. This is the first time Inuit went to Toronto for this dancing festival. But yeah, it's 100% recreation, all those things.
Wow, that sounds like an amazing experience. Are the youth back from that festival yet?
Oh yeah, they just got back 2 days ago. They were really blowing up on Facebook. Givalak News was calling me, CBC Radio, CBC North.
Wow.
And then once I gave them all the names, then they started. The reporters started looking for those kids in Toronto, and then they were being interviewed. They were all being treated like superstars. It was awesome. I got
That's
like two
great.
Pictures.
You know what? That's, maybe you could share that for your RLA or your required learning activity this week, because this week you're asked to share something like a festival or something, and that would be a really cool thing to share. It would be neat for people to see from different places, especially if it's something that brings Indigenous youth from across the country. So maybe, and it sounds like you got pictures, so we're looking for pictures this week, so that'd be great.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Thanks, Nathan. And Scott, how about for you? In your community of Hay River, do you consider music, dancing, festivals, and things to be recreation or something else?
No, I would say recreation for sure. I mean, my own personal sort of definition of recreation is, you know, anything you do that brings you joy, or you do because it brings you joy, I think falls under recreation. So all those things are considered recreation for us.
That's great. I like that word, just a simple word of joy, like three letters. That's a really nice way to kind of explain recreation and capture it, because in our field, we use different words like leisure, and leisure can mean different things, because sometimes leisure is not productive. It, you know, whereas recreation is something positive, something that you said brings you joy, makes you feel good, connects you with other people. So. Thanks, that's great. So it's interesting to think about that, and I think that sometimes in bigger communities, you know, maybe in big cities, they don't necessarily think of things like, you know, square dancing or festivals or, you know, getting out on the land as recreation. They might call it culture or arts or something else, but I think in the North, you know, recreation is a great umbrella term for all of those things that, as Scott so clearly said, bring you joy. So, it's great. So let's think about some of those fun things this week. So I have on the presentation slides, there's links to videos about music, dancing, festivals, on the land activities, and traditional games. So as you guys know, many cultural arts, recreation, and sport activities and events are really unique to our regions and our communities. You know, I often hear about square dancing, especially like Baker Lake and places in Nunavut. It sounds like square dancing is something that's really big, but not something that's so big in the Yukon, for example. So I think that we have differences, you know, and like Return of the Sun festivals in Inuvik and things like that we might not experience in, you know, Hay River or Whitehorse or anything. So as a recreation leader or leader in your community, you might be involved in planning, supporting, coordinating, or just volunteering at some of these activities and events. Sometimes if you're hosting them, like Nathan had said, that's all what you do, sometimes you might have to justify that they're recreation or that they fit with your community's culture and values. And you have to market why they're unique and why they're important and why people should be participating. So what I wanted to do is just take a little bit of time to share some of the characteristics or qualities that make cultural arts, recreation, or sport activities and events special. So I want you to think of, I know this isn't very relevant to the North, but think of a 30-second sales pitch, or sometimes we say a 30-second elevator pitch. You know, like the 30 seconds that you've got to explain to somebody what you're doing and why it's important, what makes it special. One of the things that when I fly on Air North, their magazine has this regular feature in it, and their feature interviews a unique Yukoner, and they always get asked to describe or explain the Yukon to somebody who doesn't live here. And it's really fun to read those descriptions. So I want you to think of something like that in this next question. Peter, I'm going to put you on the spot first, and then we're going to go Kumnapik, Nathan, Scott, and Deanne. And if you're not quite sure how to answer it, no big deal. You can pass on this question. But what I'd like you to do is share some words or phrases in 30 seconds or less, how you might explain to somebody who's not from your community what makes culture, arts, recreation, and sport events unique to your community or to your region, if that's a little easier for you. So what is it that makes them special? How would you characterize or explain them to someone else? So, Peter, do you want to give that a shot?
I think, there's definitely like a fairly, I think like 25% of the population of the Yukon is First Nation. And so there's a huge amount of First Nation influence from, and that's really cool to see. And it's gotten even better in the last several years, because I see a lot more culture and attention and support. And I think another big thing is sort of like, because we're sort of a northern community, they're sort of just banding together over like the winter, because the winter can be very harsh and difficult for people. And so I think a huge amount of our recreation and sports and our culture and our art are kind of a reflection of those things. So, yeah.
So kind of the seasons and the First Nations influences and cultures and things like that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Peter. Kumnapik, for you, what makes sort of, or what are the characteristics, or how would you describe or characterize sort of the culture, art, recreation, and sport things that are unique in your community? And I noticed your phone's muted, so you might have to unmute it.
Okay. The characteristics that make sport activities, recreation, arts, events, cultural, uniquely northern is that you get to keep the memories you make and gain some knowledge for you to live by while learning the needed skills for any purpose, whether it be cultural, spiritual, emotional, or physical.
Wow, that's great. I really appreciate how you take the time to think through your answers for this, because everything you said had really a lot of meaning to it. I really like the idea of, you know, anything that you're doing, even if it's recreation, it provides that knowledge to live by. That's a great way of explaining it. So thank you. Nathan, how about yourself? What characteristics make, you know, culture, arts, recreation, or sport activities and events unique in Baker Lake or in your region?
The only thing I can think of is Baker Lake is the only inland community in Nunavut. All the other communities are coastal. That makes us pretty unique. Baker Lake is the geographical center of Canada, so we always say that Baker Lake is the heart of Canada, and we play games, traditional games, every year. Baker Lake is the only one that still celebrates their annual, what do you call it, birthday? When Baker Lake became a municipality, we spent like $32,000 games just to play traditional games, like one-foot high kick, snow snake, ice chiseling, just celebration, a whole 1 week long games of just playing games, hamlet days, and just having fun, having community feasts. That's what basically it gives. Events.
That's great. I always, the people I've talked to, including yourself from Baker Lake, like Megan Hassey went through the Certificate in Northern Recreation Leadership last year, and she talked lots about things like square dancing and festivals. It sounds like such a fun place.
It's very busy. I'm your rec coordinator here. You never stop.
I bet. And I had no idea that it was the geographical center of Canada, so really great thing to, that's so cool. You can put this big map and there's Baker Lake right in the middle. So thanks, Nathan. Scott, how about yourself? What characteristics or how would you characterize the uniqueness of culture, arts, recreation, and sport in either in your community or in your region?
I think, one of the things that stands out about Hay River, we have a great access to the Great Slave Lake. There's really amazing fishing and, we have a really, really awesome sandy beach and stuff like that. Also, sporting wise, we are the town that hosts the NWC track and field championships every year. But, of course, it hasn't happened for 3 years because of COVID, and it's in jeopardy this year. But on a normal year, that's something that's a real highlight as well. I would say, other than that, it has a really good, community atmosphere, and it's a community that really places a strong emphasis on the value of recreation.
That's great. Thank you. That gives me a really clear picture in my mind. I had no idea you guys had a big sandy beach, and that definitely pulls a community together. So it's I bet people are looking forward to getting back while the weather's hot. So thank you, Scott. Kian, how about yourself? I noticed you dropped for a little bit from the call, but I don't know if you want to jump in and share what you think, what the characteristics are that make culture, recreation, arts, and sport activities unique in Whitehorse. Oh, he just dropped from the call again, so he might be having problems. So we'll move on then. So thanks. As you can see, like, there's a difference from what each one of you said. And the one thing I think of when I think of the Yukon is one of the tourism things Peter just posted, outdoor recreation. So our tourism branch used to say the Yukon is larger than life. That was their slogan. I don't know if they use that anymore or not, but it's always big events. It's like the Yukon River Quest, where people have a competition to go from Whitehorse to Dawson City, or there's the Quest in the winter, which is the dog sled race, and there's the bike relay, and then on the dog sled race, you can now winter bike, or you can ski, so there's all these great, or there's the Reckless Raven race, like there's always these big, huge scale, outdoor recreation sporting competitions. So that's something that I think of when I think of the Yukon as well. So I'm just going to reply to Gian. So the vision for recreation in Canada, and I think it applies to all of us, is one where everybody has opportunities to engage in meaningful, accessible recreation experiences that foster our individual and community well-being. So if you take a moment to reflect on the videos that you might have watched and the activities and events that others have shared or that you're familiar with, you really think, like Nathan talked about the heart and the geographic heart that Baker Lake is. So, some of these cultural and festivals really showcase the heart of our communities. Local culture is usually always reflected, but if you look closely, you can also identify the interests that people have and their values and their beliefs and their passions. So not only do the activities and events foster health and well-being, but they also strengthen connections to culture and to our environment. So when we're out on the land, and we enjoy being out on the land. We actually value the land more. And I know that might sound strange for those of you who are like for Inuit or Indigenous people, but for a non-Indigenous person, learning to value the land isn't something that we necessarily grow up with. So it's, you know, having recreation that takes place out on the land is really important to, you know, help everybody, regardless of who you are and where you live, be good stewards of the land. So if you think about it, I've got one more question for you here. If you think about the past few years, Scott mentioned the NWT track and field championships and the cancellation. So, you know, public health restrictions from COVID has led to the cancellation of many, if not most, of our larger events. And I think that it's important, even at this point in time, to recognize that the effects of the pandemic are still with us, even though the restrictions have been lifted. So it means that festivals, cultural events, and on-the-land activities might not look quite the same as what they did 3 to 4 years ago. So I just want to take a moment and consider if and how the pandemic has changed these activities and events, and what are some strategies that you might need to keep in mind moving forward. So, Kumanathik, I'm going to start with you, but I'll pop the question in first so that you have a chance to see what the question is. And I was just going to ask, how have the past few years changed the way we deliver special events? And is there anything that you need to keep in mind when you're planning these in the future? You know, maybe people are more uncomfortable with large groups, or maybe there's things that we do now that we didn't do 5 years ago. So any thoughts about that, Kumanathik?
Yeah, everything's changed after the pandemic. Nothing feels the same anymore. Post-pandemic, we used to feel very good and not afraid to be close to each other. But nowadays, something seems off. We're subconsciously social distancing nowadays. Even when we're having a great time, the pandemic made us all a bit of a germaphobe. So we now deliver in a way we feel is safest for all, any and all participants, by providing hand sanitizers and masks for those who want them.
Yeah, those are really, really good points. I like how you say that we're things still seem off. I would 100% agree with that. You know, like I see people I know, and I'm not sure if I can give them a hug or shake their hand or not, or, you know, whatever it is, right? Or you look for hand sanitizer when you go somewhere. Or I know elders who are still worried about, you know, getting sick, for example. So definitely there's things that we're doing, and you've identified a number of those, so thank you. Nathan, how about yourself? From your experience, how has the pandemic in the past few years changed the way we deliver special events, if at all? And what do you keep in mind now when you're planning these in the future?
Yeah, the pandemic really did change, well, Baker Lake, I know for sure. I remember before the pandemic, Inuit, we're always social, always hugging, kissing on the cheek, or gunik, you know, hug, you know. Always, like, oh, I haven't seen you in 2 days, acting as if they haven't seen each other in a year. Like, that was always the norm. Like, it was always very social. And after pandemic, no one even shakes hands anymore. Like, elders don't want to have events in public in case there's like RSV or COVID or any other infectious disease out there. Like, it's always in the back of their mind that they might get sick and die because they're weak and old, right? Like I said, it changed everything. Like, all our events are trying to be outdoors, even though it's safe to be indoors now. And like others have said, people are still social distancing. It changed everything.
Yeah, it's hard when something like that changes even the way that you are with each other, like, you know, greeting people so closely and warmly, and that ending, because it still makes people feel isolated, right? So I guess, you know, one of the things is having those events, even if you have to have them outside to encourage people to come, at least it might help people start to feel comfortable again, maybe in the future. So really important. And there's such a history of, you know, especially in the North and in Inuit communities of how diseases that are brought from outside have really destroyed communities. So, you know, that fear has got to still be at the back of the minds of especially elders who know those histories, right?
Yeah, because even the elders still remember that case, like tuberculosis. I remember in the 50s, 60s, even my father was sent down. I remember hearing the stories, so yeah. People still worried.
Yeah, for sure. So it you know, it's great if you're able to adapt your events and special activities and things like that enough that people still can, like Scott said, have some joy from them. So thank you for sharing that. Scott, how about yourself? What's been your experience of the past few years and how it's changed the way we deliver special events, and is there anything we need to keep in mind for planning these in the future?
I think one of the opportunities that's sort of been raised by the pandemic was, you know, instead of having big events where we bring people together for recreation, like encouraging the and promoting the value of recreation within families. You know, so instead of having a big event where we all come together and do this, maybe we can provide tools that people can, that they can, or resources, right, that people can pick up and use to have the same experience, but just within their family unit. And so really, you know, instead of having recreation done in big groups, we're kind of introducing it into the home life and helping to strengthen those bonds.
Do you have any specific examples of that you know of how that's been done?
Some of the things that went on in Hay River during the pandemic, like there was like art competitions, you know, so like the library or other organizations would provide the materials that you needed, and with, you know, at home with your family, you would complete it and you would post your pictures of it on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and then there would be, you know, some judging and awards and that sort of stuff, or just some kind of friendly commentary about it. There was like baking clubs that were started, same idea, where, you know, there would be themes around, you know, this week's theme is, you know, bake your best brownies or that sort of thing. So it's ways of staying connected, but also, like, as opposed to us getting together and doing something as a large group, it's us doing things in together with our families. But then also sharing with other families at the end of it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, like it might, that really strengthens those family connections, which are so important to support the children and to support elders and things. So that, you know, I think that's been a very positive outcome, as you mentioned, of doing things differently. While you were talking, I was thinking Trista posted in FS101, our last learning event, about some of the outdoor activities that were set up sort of with less structure and for families. And so I appreciated those too. So your conversation or what you shared brought those to mind as well. So thank you. Peter, any thoughts from yourself about how the past few years have changed how we deliver these activities and what we should keep in mind in the future?
I mean, a lot of really good things have been said about sort of that germaphobe thing. I've definitely noticed that a lot more. Like, people are way more reluctant to, like, their food or beverages or, you know, anything. And even it would be, like, family members. Like, I feel like even our family traditions have kind of eroded because we have, like, a big extended family that we always invite every year for, I mean, Christmas or, like, in the summer, we go all camping together and share food and that. Those traditions have just, like, completely gone by the wayside, which is kind of in part due because also people around, like, my siblings and cousins all have kids now, and so it was, like, starting to go, and then the pandemic almost, like, accelerated that. But then in terms of, like, in the context of recreation, I feel like considering that people who are, like, I feel like older adults or people who are more sort of prone to getting like a serious illness from COVID, like you have to consider the fact that they are going to still be much more careful. Like, I feel like I personally, I'm someone who's relatively young and I know all my friends, like we all were like obviously fearful of COVID, but not to the same extent. And so just considering the fact that you're kind of accommodating for not necessarily yourself, but sort of these older people who might not be comfortable still because of sort of what has happened. And I think it's important to kind of consider going forward in recreation. Cause I definitely still see that demographic as being very still wary of germs and public spaces. And I still see people wearing masks in the grocery store. And so it's like, not, it's not gone away, even though we don't really talk about it as much anymore. But yeah.
Yeah, and like Nathan mentioned RSV, and so, you know, the pandemic also sort of made everything else lay low, and this past winter has been really bad for RSV, which is bad for young babies and young children and elderly, right? Whereas
yeah.
People your age might not even notice if you have it. You just might feel unwell for a bit. So, yeah, it sort of is extended to other illnesses, as Nathan pointed out as well. So definitely things to keep in mind. Thank you. It's interesting. I don't know if things will ever go back to the way they were, but that's kind of what society and life is about, is looking forward and trying to find ways to keep doing things like Scott pointed out, you know, for families and, you know, like putting out, you know, hand sanitizer and things and getting out on the land just to try and make people feel more comfortable through recreation. So thank you. So I'd like to just take a moment to summarize today's conversation, and then I'm going to invite you to comment on one last thing, which is to reflect on your own role in relation to recreation, arts, culture, and sport. So just to summarize, festivals are ways in which we can teach and celebrate local and Indigenous culture, and festivals, as was pointed out, are often linked to the seasons, so like the return of the sun in Inuvik, and big festivals can require a lot of planning and resources. Sometimes you just have one person who's dedicated to that's their whole job, because they can be really big. On the land activities and events, when we talk about those, are characteristic of traditional ways of Indigenous cultures. And as Kaminapik mentioned, like they help people develop knowledge and knowledge that you can carry forward with you. So being on the land is also valued by settlers, people who have chosen to make the north and rural areas in Canada their home. And these communities, I think, are finding ways to reinforce on-the-land lifestyles through traditional and modern-day activities and events. And the music, drumming, and dance across the north is really cool to watch through videos or to experience. And those express culture and traditions, and they're also very artistic, welcoming, and inclusive, because you don't have to be good at sports to do something else well. I heard that in the Yukon they're having hand games competitions through all the schools, and a friend of mine who's a teacher, and her little guy and one of her students who's 8 years old was so excited because he won the hand games competition at his elementary school. So, and then he gets to go to the other school in Carmax and compete there. So he's pretty excited about that. In the north, we consider Arctic sports and dene games traditional games. But as you guys know, Inuit have a rich, rich history of traditional games for teaching, because Kuminapik pointed that out, and also for enjoyment. I think the overall profile in our communities, especially the communities that may have less of a First Nations or Indigenous presence, that there the profile of traditional games is growing, and people are excited to be able to learn and participate even if that's not from their own culture. So I think as a recreation leader in your communities, you can do your part by incorporating traditional games into your activities and events, like my friend's example at the school. So if festivals, music, and on-the-land activities and traditional games are all part of recreation, it can be really valuable to consider what our responsibilities are as leaders in community recreation. So my last question, and I'm going to start with Nathan for this one, and I will pop it in the chat so that you can see what the question is as well, is what is the role of community recreation or yourself in regards to arts, music, or cultural events, and how can you personally support these in your community or region? And you might, whoops, I put way too much in the chat there. Hold on one sec. you might have already answered this question, so if you have and you want to pass, that's okay. No worries. So, Nathan, any other thoughts? Like, I think you said that all of these things are recreation and that you support them enough while you're busy, but is there anything else that you wanted to share about your role in recreation in relation to art, music, and cultural activities?
Well, as a recreation coordinator, even your programming taught that rec coordinators should join as many committees and organizations as possible. So I've joined the Tlautemute Elders Group. I've also joined the Jesse Una board member. I'm now a board member with Signing Authority, so that it'll help promote the Inuit arts. And like I said, all rec coordinators should be in as many committees or organizations that promote music, art, culture, like everything that is the heart of your community. And that's the way I could contribute, is by getting feedback from the community members from that committee, or like, and then I could advise them as well. But that's how I contribute, with art and music and Inuit culture.
That's great.
I see it as my job.
Do you do that as part of your work time, or do you do that in addition to your work time?
I do that in addition. They asked me to volunteer because, you know, elders can't pay. It's more like a volunteer role. Same thing with the Jesse Una. Sure, I get a honoraria, but it's like 1-2 meetings a year, and it's like $100. But they meet for like 2-3 hours. You know, it's nothing, but it's more of a courtesy. Like, I'm signing checks. I'm advising them how we can make more money, stuff like that. Like, any way I could help.
And that's great, because by being on those boards and those committees, that, as you said, it really connects you to what people's interests are and helps you probably do your job better and plan better for recreation.
Yeah, it really does. It makes my job easier, and less people are mad at me because they have more input. So, well, that's how they feel.
That's good. You don't want people mad at you. Being a recreation director or coordinator is a tough role sometimes. People always want something different. So good to hear. Thank you. Scott, how about yourself? I know that you're with the Youth Center. So what do you guys do in regards to arts, music, cultural events? And how do you feel like you contribute or support these in your community or region?
Sort of the biggest philosophy or sort of practice that we have in Youth Center is that we're trying to offer young people the opportunity to expose themselves to as many different forms of expression as possible. And we do so in a way that doesn't cost them anything. So for example, we have free use of electronic music equipment like synthesizers, and we just purchased a whole bunch of DJ equipment. So something that maybe they've thought about, this is something I'd like to try, but of course the upfront cost of some of this stuff is pretty expensive. And then, we're looking at getting, some more traditional instruments as well, guitars and fiddles and that sort of stuff. And again, just same thing with the different sort of art stuff that we do. Just giving them the opportunity to have experience at as wide a variety of things as they can. Because you never know what someone's going to have an affinity for, and maybe that's something that, really changes their life and becomes a lifelong passion, or just something that helps them along in their life.
That's a really great philosophy that you have, because while you were talking, I was thinking of my granddaughter, who's not quite a year and a half old, and the most important thing for her is to be outside and to explore everything. And we let babies and toddlers go and explore, but when we get to youth, sometimes society wants them to sort of fit into these boxes and stops their exploring. But what you're saying is it's so important to explore all sorts of different things to really discover what your interests and passions are. So that's such a great philosophy for you. So thank you for sharing that. Peter, any thoughts from you? What's the role of your community recreation in regards to arts, music, and culture, or how can you support those in your region?
I think the biggest thing that, I mean, I don't have a ton of experience, but I think putting yourself out there is, like, literally the number one thing. And realizing that you can honestly collaborate with anyone if you really put your mind to it. Like, I found that, like, there's just so many people out there that are, especially in the smaller, like, wider season, super small, but it's relatively small, and everyone knows each other to some extent, and it might help a bit because I was born and raised here, but, like, I know that, like, I always see people I know through some mean, like, even if we went to, like, school together when we were, like 10, 15 years ago. And there, people are always very supportive of collaboration, but a lot of the time you have to be the one to kind of volunteer to do the work to kind of, like, help get the wheels going, and then you'll realize that people will meet you halfway a lot of the times and help facilitate. So just sort of getting out there and putting your name or your organization out there and seeing how you can work with them. And I have the opportunity because I have a lot of flexibility in my position. I know some people don't have as much, but that's my suggestion. As a coordinator, like I really like delivering programming, but as a coordinator, I realized that you can actually just facilitate. You can have almost more influence because you can facilitate a bunch of other things all at once, and instead of being the person to always have to be the one to do the delivery. So that is cool, but it's not always as fun because you have to be behind the desk a lot.
But yeah, it's sort of like making those networks, right, and strengthening the networks that are out there so that more can happen, that meets a greater variety of community needs and is more inclusive too. So thank you.
Yeah.
Kumanalpik, how about for yourself? In your community, what's the role of recreation in regards to arts, music, and culture, and how can you support these in your community or region?
The recreation has a few roles when it comes to supporting these events and activities. We could be the pillars to recruiting athletes, participants, seniors, bands through either drop-in sports or co-sports. If not, just go to the school and ask for the ask to speak with the music teacher and that's pillars to recruiting participants, and we could be the coaches, volunteers, hosts, or even be a participant as well. But when it comes to roles, we could do the scheduling of events, planning stage, and deliver the program or event.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. So what that tells me from each of your conversations is, as Kumanalpik just said, there's many different ways that you can get involved. So from sitting on boards like Nathan did to, ensuring that there's a wide range of opportunities like Scott suggested, and to making connections like Peter suggested, or to filling specific roles that are actually needed, as Kumanalpik mentioned. So thank you very much. And I'd like to thank you guys for sharing your perspectives on recreation, arts, culture, and sport today. I know it was a small conference call, but it was great. And before we wrap up, I'd like to acknowledge Peter and Kumanalpik and Nathan, because this is your 12th core learning event. You have stuck with it since September. Way to go. And after you've finished all your required learning activities, you will be earning your certificate in Northern Recreation Leadership. And each territory is responsible for presenting the certificate. So Nathan and Kumnapik Arpan will look after that presentation, and Peter Arpe here will. And Scott, for you, you only have two left to do, which are next September, and then after that, NWTRPA, probably at their conference in October, will be presenting certificates. I'll be touching base with him about that one. So thank you, everybody. Peter, you're also finishing your certificate in Northern Recreation Management, and Nathan and Kumanopic will be starting that in September. So if you guys want any tips from Peter, you can chat to Peter. And Scott, if you're interested in the other learning events there, the advanced ones in the management certificate are quite different to the ones in the core. They're more sort of management things like proposal writing and evaluation and understanding legal risk and things like that. So let me know if you have any questions about that. I really appreciate you guys being on this journey with me. I feel kind of sad. Well, I'm happy it's summer, but you know, it's sort of like, wow, I look forward to talking to everybody and hearing how things are going. And it's amazing what we've actually learned from each other over the past 9 months or so. So if you're not connected with Recreation North, you can connect. We have a closed Facebook page that Peter can add you to or I can add you to, and it's called the Northern Recreation Network. And it's hosted by ARPE in the Yukon, but there's people who belong to it from all three territories. So feel free if you'd like to join that, or if you're not, just let me know. You can just pop in the chat, yes, I'd like to, or you can send a request. Peter, maybe you can find the web page and just pop it in the chat so that Nathan and Kumanopik and Scott can see what the link is for that. So your final required learning activity is called China Spotlight, and it's due on Sunday. If you have any questions, it's pretty straightforward, but I'm looking for something that's fun, engaging, photos, a video, a story, an audio thing. Northern Recreation Network, the closed Facebook page, and if you can put it in the chat, Peter, in the other one. There we go. Oh, yeah, got it. Perfect. So if you have any questions, please stay on the line after I stop the recording. And just so you know, if you have any other required learning activities that are outstanding or due, you actually have until June 4th to finish everything. But as of June 4th, I'm going to be sort of archiving it and setting up next year's learning events. So I think all of you guys on the call are on track, though, so that sounds great. So thank you so much, Nathramik, Masi Cho, merci, Guanashish. I really appreciate everybody's input, and thank you. And all the best for your snow conditions, your fire conditions, and your heat conditions across the territory. And Nathan and Kumanopik, I look forward to reconnecting with you in September. Thanks. Okay, I'm going to stop the conference call recording, and I'll still be on the call if anyone has any questions.